5 seconds of silence so that we can get the background noise. Oh, let me shut my door. So we can get the background noise, and then we'll be able to filter that out. So we'll start that.
5 seconds. Now.
And there we are. Mm. I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I'm Sean Main.
And we are Commanderin.
Wait a minute.
Hmm? What?
Is that lead designer of Kaladesh, Sean Main?
That's me.
Whoa.
We get some music right here.
Commanderin.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about four banned topics: religion, politics, Hearthstone, and hip-hop. Unless, of course, one of us breaks out into spontaneously rapping. If you like what you hear and want to support the show, go to patreon.com/commanderinmtg and donate to us. Patreon allows you to give back to the creators you appreciate. If you donate a buck a show, it helps immensely. And if you are, I have to say, a little bit insane and donate $10 per show, you get access to all of the hosts in our exclusive Facebook chat group. Patroni there also get to contribute to show plans, and they get sneak peeks and exclusive content. Now, sometimes from Nate, isn't that correct, Nate?
Mm-hmm.
And also check us out on YouTube. We're doing some fun things over there as well. Sometimes exclusive content too. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. You may have already gotten a little bit of a hint by listening to our intro. We're going to talk about, well, kind of Kaladesh block and focusing on Aether Revolt.
But Aether first, Revolt, actually. I'm going to jump in because Jeremy Jarvis would chastise me if I let you get away with an alternate pronunciation.
Oh, we do not abide alternate pronunciations, do we? And we'll have to have Jeremy Jarvis on the show so that he can yell at us directly at some point.
He is a very entertaining man. I highly would recommend that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
You just need to give him a bottle of whiskey and he'll probably join you.
Done. But first, so you can already hear, we have spoiled it. We asked a special guest to come on the show and talk about the entire block, focusing on Kaladesh as a little specialty for a chunk of the show. None other than the former Red Lord of the Council of Colors, the lead designer of the Kaladesh set, Sean Main.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for coming on again.
My pleasure.
Yeah, you're always welcome on the show. It's been 4 months or so since we spoke to you, and one of your sets has been released.
Yeah, it has been a whirlwind watching it, and now I just played in the Aether Revolt employee pre-release, so I am jazzed about Aether Revolt too. And
oh, how cool is that? How can Nate and I get invited to that employee pre-release? Trick question.
I can tell you one way. It's not break into the building on the day, but...
Oh. Somebody's tried that?
I mean, this is jumping way ahead, but I had this wonderful game at the pre-release where I got killed by someone taking a Quicksmith Rebel and loading up a Renegade map and shooting me to death with it. And I was just like, this is the coolest set ever. I'm getting destroyed by a weaponized map.
All right. That's very cool. Sorry, I'm just thinking about weaponized maps. Well, so before we jump into Aether Revolt, see, I've pronounced it correctly, finally, can you catch us up on some of the design principles of Kaladesh? Because we had you on for Conspiracy 2, and I don't know, we had a thought seize, how's that? Didn't have you on. It would have been back-to-back pretty much because, good Lord, there just wasn't enough time to draft Conspiracy 2 before Kaladesh came out.
Oh, you are telling me. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the design principles for Kaladesh?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was co-lead with Mark Rosewater on that. And we really had a few guiding principles, but the really key one that would ask after every playtest, every time someone came and tried out the set, we would ask them, did this make you feel like an inventor? It's this beautiful world that the line that creative used was anything is buildable, that it's full of these, you know, incredible inventors. And, you know, we previewed it way back in Origins, and we really wanted to make sure as a player, you felt like you got to do something creative, build something unique. And that was just like the guiding principle through it all.
Oh, that's cool. I'm assuming that most of the playtesters said yes, eventually.
I mean, it was something playtest to playtest as we started working on, you know, we went through a lot of mechanics, actually, for the set. Energy and vehicles were the two constants that from the very early days, you know, we have a process that precedes even the beginning of design called exploratory design, where it's really like laying the groundwork. You're not working with a card file or anything, but you're really just exploring concepts and kind of getting the lay of the land. And Rosewater on day one said, let's try to make energy work. I think it's this really cool thing that we've played with before. And then sort of the secondary thing that I was championing and others were like, we have these images of this world and sort of these skyships are just such an evocative part. We've really got to pay that off. So those were there very early, but then things like fabricate and then just some of the mechanical expressions, we kicked around a lot of different concepts to get there. But we really, you know, wanted to make sure you got to feel creative in the course of playing the game. And that also manifested sort of with, and energy is a good example of this, where you might, one game to the next, you might get to do something a little bit different. That, you know, one game you're funneling all of your energy into drawing cards. But the next game, you're kind of adapting to the situation that you're in and you're piling on plus one counters with it or using it for different purposes, kind of one game to the next.
Yeah, I like that, especially about the fabricate mechanic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. That making that choice, I was describing it to somebody on the during my drive home tonight. Like I was like, you know, it's a difficult choice, and it really depends on what other cards you have it both in the deck and in your hand. So you have to make a choice as you cast it. Do I add the +1/+1 counter, or do I create a servo because maybe three turns from now I have something that benefits having more creatures? It's really wonderful.
Yeah, I really am happy with how that turned out, that it's a really high pressure, like it's a very spiky kind of decision. I remember when we first playtested, Mark and I actually disagree a little bit about our memories collide with who actually created that in the exact circumstances, but he thinks he was solving one problem. I think I was solving another, but regardless, like I remember very distinctly the first playtest because it was, is it going to always be like one game to the next or one deck to the next? Like I'm always building servos or I'm always adding +1/+1 counters. And even just like simple creatures that were vanilla other than fabricate, you'd come up with these situations where just like, you've got a 3/3, so I want a 3/3 to fight your guy. So I won't pick the servo, I'll put on the counter, and then you add keywords in there and it throws another monkey wrench in the decision. And we're like, yeah, this is really cool. This is something that's like the binary decision on its face is like the nature of the choice is very obvious, but there's real depth to that gameplay.
Yeah.
And adapting to like one game to the next and what you expect to happen.
Yeah, it's quite well done.
Oh, thank you. I'm really pleased with how that mechanic plays. I'm really pleased with the set overall. I think vehicles were one of those that we knew we wanted as a mechanic really early on, but we iterated just every which way to get to the final execution. And even after we handed off from design to development, they were still kind of turning those knobs on the mechanic, like switching from the big one was switching from number of creatures crewing the vehicle to total power crewing the vehicle and
right.
playing with some of the timing windows. And I'm real happy with how that's turned out.
Yeah, it's a really neat mechanic. It's caused Nate to generate. We'll be talking about it a little bit later as we go card by card. But it made Nate generate a what is it? A Lord Humongous deck.
That's right.
Who is your commander?
King Makar the Gold Cursed.
Oh yes, he loves cars.
He does. He absolutely does.
Gold plated skyships. Yeah.
He's even got Car in his name.
King Makar.
All right. We got a Patron question from Henri Stukenborg. What is the best card you designed that no one else appreciates? And what is the worst card you designed that is loved by others, but that you grimace at the very mention?
Oh, that is a great question. Okay, you're going to have to help me remember the name of a card, which right. I'm always embarrassed when I forget. But
no, you guys know all the playtest names.
I know. We live with a different set of names often, you know, right up until we see the card.
Yeah.
But I was also lead designer of Magic Origins. And
yeah.
the one mana renown creature that turns into, when it's renowned, taps to give you a mana.
Oh, the Hierarch.
Yeah. So yeah, Honored Hierarch, I thought was the coolest thing. I really enjoyed the way Renown played generally, that it, you know, you got this like story where your creature was kind of shrimpy and then it did something cool. And it's one of those where, like, I think the dream of the one mana elf is one of those that's just like people are so attached to that now that they had to jump through a hoop to make it work. And admittedly, then, like, there's a hoop. You might not get it. Just broke people's hearts, and they hated. I got so much hate on that card, more than I can think of for any other card that I'm responsible for. And I still think it's the coolest thing.
We looked at it and realized that it would be pretty difficult to play in Commander.
That's totally fair. I mean, you have so many more targets to potentially get that renown on turn two, but...
Yeah, you know, maybe that Honored Hierarch will sneak through in a Commander game. What do you think, Nate?
No.
And then the second half is, what is the worst card you designed that is loved by others, but that you grimace at?
Huh, that is an interesting one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Henry asked this question tonight just before the show.
Yeah, I'm mulling this one over. It's so much easier to focus on the opposite.
You love all your babies?
Well, okay, I can answer the question a little sideways.
Oh.
Because there's I have to tackle it head on. You won't let me dodge out of this one?
No, that's fine. Go sideways and we'll see.
So I was thinking about Aether Revolt.
Yeah.
And I wasn't one of the designers on the set, but I can certainly appreciate, and I know, especially in Commander, I'm going to have to play against Planar Bridge all day long. And that is the kind of like blunt hammer, powerful when it comes out, and in staring at the set, like the card I'm excited about is Aid from the Cowl. Which is a revolt card that gets you stuff from the top of your library, but it's random. You aren't certain what you're getting. You have to jump through a little bit of a hoop to get it. That's not just mana. And I stare at those two cards next to each other, and I'm like, ugh, Planar Bridge is the card I'm going to need to see every day. And I'm so much more excited for this other one. And just the power level, it's not going to be the thing people are playing as much.
Yeah, I think it's accurate. You're going to be seeing Planar Bridge a lot.
Does that answer a dodge? Should I come up with a better answer?
I don't know. So you designed both of those cards, Aid from the Cowl and Planar Bridge?
No, I did not.
Oh, that's the dodge, isn't it?
Yeah, that is the dodge.
All right. Well, Nate has a long memory. We will come back to this.
Okay. I will think about this one.
And so before we get to the meaty topics, we have some news. First, Nate, do we have a Sean Watson update?
Oh, yeah. So he contacted Sean Main over the International Sean Network. And Sean Watson had to step out. He's getting involved in the Brexit negotiations. He was last seen leaving his office with a few straitjackets and heading to Parliament.
I was told that one of the banned topics was politics.
Hey, I'm just saying what he's doing. I'm not commenting on the politics themselves. I'm just making a joke here.
Well, we wish Sean the best of luck in his Brexit negotiations. Who knows what side he'll come out on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We, long-time listeners, will never be able to figure that out. Hey, in other news, this is a bit of self-promotion, isn't it? Nate is writing articles on edhrec.com.
Yes, I am. I'm doing a series where I focus on each one of the partners in Commander 2016. And I give each one a full article, and I build a deck, and I kind of go through the process of how I build a deck with edhrec.com.
Yeah. Even though we have talked about your process before, it was really neat to see it.
Cool.
Yeah.
That is super cool to hear.
Yeah, you should check it out. The thoroughness with which Nate approaches deck building is a little bit scary, but it produces incredibly effective decks. So, you know, not to toot your horn too much, but of course, Sean, did you know that Nate's deck won the Commander versus Community competition they had? They pulled four decks from different people in the community, including Mr. What's his name?
Blake Rasmussen.
Rasmussen.
Oh, very cool. Your old friend.
Yeah. We have sung his praise.
Yes, I've heard it.
And so Nate's Damia deck is, how would Jeremy Jarvis pronounce that? Is it Damia or Damia, Sage of Stone?
I have heard people say Damia, but you are delving into territory where I can't say that with certainty.
Okay.
Mm. Some people say Damia.
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 Especially after playing you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have you had a chance to play with the partners from Commander 2016?
Oh, yeah. I think that was a phenomenal set. That is possibly my favorite Commander release that there's been. I just think that mechanic is such a clever way of handling the challenge of how to do four colors and not just make it overwhelming. So, yeah, I love that. I think Ethan did a great job with it.
Actually, wasn't it created by our deck testing group member Dean Guti?
Nope.
He in parallel surmised that it would be something similar to a partner mechanic. I think he called it ally or something like that.
Oh, really? That's very
yeah.
Cool.
It was an interesting case of parallel. So I don't know if you have time to look at these things, but go check out Nate's articles on edhrec.com. They're quite good.
I will. I've been actually wanting to. I know you say with the partners, but I've been wanting to build a Yidris deck, so that might be a good source of inspiration.
Yeah. Have you built a partners deck?
I have not yet.
No, you haven't yet. What is it about Yidris that you like? Is it the horribly abusive cascade mechanic?
So, I mean, you earlier pointed out that I was the red mage on the our Council of Colors and Design for a long time. And I have a reputation among the designers for really enjoying chaos and enjoying anything where I get to, you know, effectively roll some dice, see what happens. So I am very excited to cascade all over the place and just, what's going to happen? I don't know. Let's find out. It's great.
You just point that cascade in the right direction.
Exactly.
I play in a league, and I play some stock Commander, the precons at work, too. Mm. And when the Yidris deck gets rolling, it's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy. I have been known to say in the league that, hey, that Yidris is just for defense, isn't it? And because you can't let him hit. Oh, no. Speaking of creating chaos, our last bit of news is we just saw some banning, some cards banned in Standard. Huh. What could possibly have happened? So it looks like Emrakul, the Promised End, was banned. Could that have had anything to do with Aetherworks Marvel? Maybe? Reflector Mage, also banned? Has to do with the efficiency of white-blue blinking? That was a theme in Kaladesh, wasn't it?
You're making me warm under the collar over here.
Hey, Smuggler's Copter. That, Nate, what set was that in?
Oh, that's a vehicle from Kaladesh.
Oh.
So, wow. I'm not a developer. I wasn't directly involved in the bannings. I mean, those guys really tear through a lot of data to come up with these kind of things. And especially, you know, Standard bannings are few and far between. What I can say is, I feel like we had some sets right in a row where we were playing with fire a little bit more than normal. anything where you have colorless cards, there's so much more risk. You know, there's a few reasons why you might ban a card, and one of them is it just becoming too ubiquitous, too much of a have to play in every single deck. It's not, well, okay, I'm playing green, and so I've got the answer to this thing and also not playing it. And you get, you know, a nice ecosystem where things feed on different cards and decks look different. And Smuggler's Copter, you know, vehicles were the shiny new thing. We had to ride a very fine line of, we wanted to make them exciting and we really, you know, have to push the envelope a little bit. But there's, you know, exactly how they're going to play out is a little bit more uncertain. And so, you know, you run a little bit more risk, and some of the times these things fall on the bad side of the risk instead of the good one. So it's always a shame when we have to ban things. But
it is. Yeah, and with vehicles being kind of a brand new thing to Magic, I guess, you know, the risk is even higher, right? You do want to push it to make them appealing, but then maybe pushed a little bit too hard.
Yep. And I mean, Emrakul falls in a kind of similar position. I mean, Emrakul is not in every deck in quite the same way. And even the colorlessness isn't quite the issue there. But there's that kind of, there are those cards that we really want to hit and be exciting and try new things. But a little bit too far, they're just the riskier things out there. And some of the time they run into these problems.
And who could possibly have predicted that someone would use Emrakul with Aetherworks Marvel on turn 4?
That's fair enough.
But let's talk a little bit about Kaladesh before we dive into Aether Revolt, shall we?
Sounds good.
And, but before we do, actually, did you design any of those cards in particular?
I didn't design Smuggler's Copter. That, especially with vehicles, there was much, much more of a development hand on it. I actually was pretty directly involved with Emrakul. I was on the Eldritch Moon design team, and Ken Nagel is a little bit of a different designer than some people. He really, most of us work sort of from the bottom up. Let's make sure the themes are appearing at common, and then we'll work on uncommons. Nagel has the philosophy, you wanna make cards like Emrakul the most awesome thing. You want to start working on them first or very early, because then you just get more time to iterate and more time to iterate. And so very early on, we had the Emrakul as the 13 mana giant flying creature, and we played around with that pseudo delirium thing to reduce the cost. The Mind Slaver type effect jumped around a lot. But that card I actually was pretty directly involved in. So Smuggler's nice. Copter I can't claim any credit for, but...
But Emrakul, you can take like 75% of the credit for that.
I mean, it's easy to always blame developers, but yeah. That one's also on a lot of us.
Yeah, so Ben Hayes?
Oh, you just wanted me to swear at Ben again, like last time. I see your game here.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think of Leovold? Leovold really took off. Speaking of legendary creatures you might have had a hand in.
Are we going to rehash the last time I was on? When I think that was, I remember Ethan listened to it and he was like, wow, they spent 15 minutes ragging on Leovold and all you could do was shrug.
Yeah. We're still in therapy about that. All right. Let's spend a few minutes on Kaladesh now that we've, when we start rehashing old abusive legendary creatures, it's probably time to move on. Kaladesh, so let's start with how you became the co-lead on that set.
Oh, that's actually a really interesting question. I don't think we've really talked about this story, but we had some sets that switched places, so... I'm pausing. I don't think I'm revealing anything dangerous here, but I don't think Mark has talked about this at all. Initially, in the plan, Amonkhet and Kaladesh were in opposite places, and Amonkhet, coming in a few months, is an Egypt-inspired set that sort of I had pitched. And
we've heard there are islands in Amonkhet.
I'm going to move on because I can say nothing about the set itself.
Gosh darn it.
Though I will say islands is a safe thing to speculate on. But they swapped positions, so I was actually originally supposed to be leading that, and Ethan was going to be leading Kaladesh. And then they swapped around, and suddenly I was dealing with Kaladesh, and that... was appropriate, though, because I'd led Magic Origins, which really got to start delving into the world. And this was actually a very different set for us in a lot of ways because it wasn't a pre-existing plane where we had to go and sort of look back at all the things we'd done the first time and really, with a returning set like Battle for Zendikar, you spend a lot of time looking what did the set do, what should we return to, what should be different. But we had a lot of art, we had a lot of ideas coming out of Magic Origins for what the set might look like, a little bit about the mechanics, but it was really still a big wide open canvas that just had some glimpses at it. And so it was a really cool way to work where we could hold up from the beginning these like gorgeous pieces of artwork, these cityscapes with the intricate filigree and those gorgeous Sam Burley clouds, and you could really imagine like, oh, this is this wondrous place, and so that was a really cool thing about when we started building the set.
When we saw the splash art with Saheeli Rye on it, we were really wowed. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And of course, it was hinted at with, I'm trying to remember, the Guardian Automaton, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was just this almost fragile-looking, beautiful structure. And we looked forward to seeing a lot more of that. And then, of course, Kaladesh has done nothing but satisfy that. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I think it is one of just the most beautiful worlds that we've been to. And it's really cool, not to jump ahead to Aether Revolt, but it's on my mind. Like,
sure.
Now seeing that same setting, but seeing, I feel like Kaladesh was a little bit different of a set because you didn't necessarily see the war and the conflict that's so integral to so many Magic sets. But instead you had cards like Cathartic Reunion in that were much more, humans connecting with each other. And it's really cool now to see some of those things like, the map turned to weapon and those like images that are just so different from the first time.
You're right. Now that you mention it in that context, the weaponized map really is, sort of tragic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the first concept art pieces was you had the same golem, and the first time it is clearly like this decorative golem, and the second time the sort of banners have unfurled down the side of it, and it is clearly like ready to go to war. And it's just that real subtle like recontextualization that suddenly like, oh, this beautiful thing is also gonna smash your face, and that's a cool. It's really cool when we get to recontextualize without warping the world.
Yeah, well, you guys have managed to pull it off. It's beautiful, and at the same time, you know, I look forward to holding the cards and seeing them a lot more, and that I think it'll drive that story home. And, of course, the story articles on the website, they've been fantastic so far since the Aether Revolt cycle started.
Yeah, I really love what the writers have been doing with the story. I'm real excited about that.
Yeah, I guess a little promotion here, which probably should be news, but next week we'll have Ben on, part of why we're sort of teasing him ahead of time. And then the following week, we're going to have Doug on. So
that's fantastic to hear.
Yeah. And Doug had an opportunity to kind of, we were shuffling around like whether or not maybe Doug should come on first. And we're happy that he waited because, of course, we can have you on. And the story isn't going to be complete until he comes on the show. So it's good. We wouldn't want to give away anything or worse, have to hold on like you guys have to. As a designer, were you involved in the early design exploration? Like, what was the inspiration behind the entire block, the set?
Oh, yeah. I was there from the beginning, working with Rosewater pretty closely. Hmm. It was a very collaborative process. We were co-leads. He had a couple things. He really had energy in mind from day one. Which we call it Aether punk, but it's, you know, drawing on some steampunk tropes, but in a very different kind of light. But
yeah,
you sort of have that right there in the name, the steam or the aether, like the idea that energy is really integral to this world. And that's why the magic here is so different. And so he had this mechanic he had played with back in the day. If I recall his stories, they went back to the original Mirrodin and had tried to do it then, but then held back. And then it was briefly in Shards of Alara as part of Esper, but that was also not the right time for it. So he was really waiting. But even as we began, it was, I think, what he was telling me and the team was, I think energy is cool. How do we go about executing on it? And so we tried a lot of different things where they were, I mean, one of them was the counter that sits on you as a player, like it ended up, but also ones that sat on each of the different cards that generated them. And I was initially keen on one where you're making sort of these blank artifact tokens that we nicknamed gizmos that you might kind of break apart and have a lot more sacrifice and artifact as a cost, but the energy was kind of the through line to create that feeling of being an inventor, that we knew that was going to be a big part of the block, and so we really iterated on that. And then some of the other things were, we knew it was an artifact set, but that it was going to be an artifact set in a very different way from a Mirrodin or Esper. And the line that we kind of used was, we're really focused on artifacts as technology, that it is not a world that is intrinsically made of metal. It's not that artifacts are biology and you have all these like naturally existing kind of robot creatures. These are definitely things that people build. And that led us a lot more. And I mean, we got to play with that theme a little bit in Origins, because all of the artifacts sort of showed up with creatures. You had all of the Whirler Rogues making thopters and things. So they just had a very different relationship to artifacts, and that informed, you know, this sense that they were inventors and got to play around with some of the themes Creative was playing with. So that was there from pretty early on, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. You describe it as aetherpunk, and I think that it's much more of a sci-fi kind of vibe than a steampunk vibe, right? Like, you basically have battle mechs. I didn't realize mm-hmm. until the last story, I guess that would be the fourth, that they were crewed, right? That they had people inside of them only when Gideon, the blah, 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 destroys the Gear Hulk. But, and there were two dwarves Spoiler. Inside. Oh, yeah, yeah. Spoiler. And there are two dwarves inside, so you have, these are battle mechs now?
They were a really interesting aspect of the design because for gameplay reasons, they wanted to be colored artifacts that you didn't want to have, the ubiquity. We wanted this really high sort of exciting cycle of just the most awesome kind of winners of the Inventor's Fair was kind of one of the initial pitches for them. But we didn't want them to just all go in every deck, so we added colored mana, and then it became a little bit of a creative question because we didn't have colored artifacts, and if you look at closely at the art, you might not be able to see it at the scale that they're all at, but all of them have that team of inventors that's sitting right there with them.
Yeah.
With that idea that, like, no, this is this giant, kaiju kind of mech, but also people built this thing and are manning this thing, and so we sort of built that in from the beginning, like, combustible Gear Hulk, someone is there responsible for it.
So instead of scale birds in the art, you have scale humans.
we love us some, scale beings.
Yeah, they're right there on the backside of the hammer, aren't they? Well, it's a great vibe either way. I think you found a very nice way to kind of satisfy that need or that sort of pent up desire for a science fiction version of magic. And here you have it with a super dense source of energy that's fairly fluid and portable and giant stomping robots. It's beautiful.
I love all of the... I mean, a huge thing in design was also figuring out sort of in the past with artifact sets, you've had colors like green that are really antagonistic to artifacts. And in this world, this kind of inspiration, the ether is part of nature, and they are often the ones that are there sort of being artificers and really looking to nature to adapt it or to recreate it. And so you don't have sort of that hostile view or that negative view, but or the negative relationship between green and the world itself. But it's just, you get those beautiful swirls in the sky and things.
Yeah.
And just the natural formations. I love the setting so much.
Yeah, it's definitely cool. I'm looking at the Ultra Pro playmat of the combustible Gear Hulk, and you can really see the detail there. And of course, I kind of glossed over it. I was talking about the cataclysmic Gear Hulk with the people on the back of the hammer. So what do the Gear Hulks do when they're not stomping on rebels? like what's their purpose? Do they lift boxes?
That's a good Doug question. I would hate to contradict anything that was stated in the story that I'm just not remembering off the top of my head, but I believe they are all created for the Inventor's Fair. But I really say that hesitatingly. You should ask him in 2 weeks.
Hey, you see that battleship I built? What do you think of it?
Isn't that giant robot with that hammer that can crush you?
Yeah.
Do I win?
Yeah. Yes. No one who could have thought that they would be put to a violent use. Hey, as an aside, was your use of the term gizmo for the, a variant of energy, the inspiration for gremlins?
No, those, it was not. I would love it if it were, but because I think the gremlins are the most adorable thing, and but no, they were not.
Yeah. All right, I'll stop referencing 1980s films, so we'll move on. Hey, Nate.
Patron Henry Stukenborg asks, what is the criteria for a mechanic such as energy to expand from a single block and perhaps become evergreen?
That's a really interesting question. So there needs to be a lot of design space for it, which Energy has, I will say that. And it has to be sort of creatively, or I guess I was going to say it has to be something that's creatively flexible, but that's actually more the other way around. If we know it might become evergreen, we give it sort of a creative skin that's a little bit more open-ended. So the example there is Prowess. When, due to our process, we knew that in Cons of Tarkir, that we didn't know, we were just making a mechanic for the Jeskai. A few months later, one of the developers said, no, I think this actually would be a great thing for us to keep using. And so instead of getting a name that was more kung fu or more specific, very flavorful to the Jeskai specifically, it was something that, no, we can apply when we go to Kaladesh, when we go to any of these different settings, and it can be a little more open-ended.
Mm.
Energy, I think, is an awesome mechanic. The challenge that I will say to it becoming an evergreen mechanic, I won't say, you know, I've learned to never say never with magic design, because in 5 years I don't want to regret something I said, but the challenge is it really requires a volume of cards for it to be interesting to a set. And it's not the kind of thing that we could just put on 4 cards, you know, in the next set and have it be satisfying. So it really, it as a mechanic, needs a volume of cards. And that makes it a little bit more challenging to be something that we'd come back to often.
Mm. I think Mark has referred to it as a, a large design space?
Yes.
And so does that help? Like, you would never take a small design space mechanic and make it an evergreen mechanic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm trying to think of a good example of that off the top of my head, but pulling mechanics from quite a while ago, something like Imprint is really cool, but you cannot make 100 Imprint cards, so we wouldn't want something like that to be the mechanic for a set. But things that are much more flexible, I mean, there's mechanics that we will come, by the time they come out, we know we want to use again. And we also are comfortable sometimes with mechanics that don't come out with every single set, but that you might see now and then. There's mechanics that have really big design space, and there's also ones, and that's really important for us to want to return to it. But being a small design space doesn't mean we wouldn't do it. But you talk a lot about, is this something we can put on 10 cards? Is this something we could put on 100 cards? If it's 100 cards and it's a cool, fun, satisfying mechanic, we're going to want to return to it again sometime.
Mm-hmm. Like Prowess and Scry.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, those are really good mechanics. Wow, thank you for sharing all of that. And if this is sort of the bridge between the two sets, because we're going to start talking about Aether Revolt in a lot more detail right now.
Yeah.
Or now. Speaking of the bridge, there's a question from Patron Andy Bentley.
When Kaladesh was in the design process, did you have an idea of how the next set would interact with it? Or does the design of the next set come from the first set?
So a little bit of both. We had elements that we played with in Kaladesh design that we held off on and we knew we'd come back to later. But often when you start up a small set design team and you're looking back at what the first set even handed you, you realize, like, oh, they didn't put this fully through its paces. So actually, we can't, you know, this thing that they thought was cool isn't going to work out, and we've got to sort of forge in a new direction. And that very much happened with this set. We had deliberately saved some mechanics. Actually, one of the things that we had sort of saved for them was really doubling down on sort of return to hand, ETB triggers, this real kind of recursive play style. We, it'll, element of that very much in Kaladesh, but we saved some of it. And then that just wasn't something that they got to blow out in the way that we had anticipated for them. So there were a lot that changed in the course of the set. You often work to set things up, but inevitably in trying to fulfill that, there's new twists and turns.
That's cool. I think our perception of it is that they are much more planned out. That's what I'm trying to say here. Like in terms of, well, we're gonna split these sets up, like we're gonna split the mechanics up between these sets, and then we know the story arc, and so this set will focus on this with these mechanics, and then this will represent these mechanics will represent this aspect of the story. But it's a much more of an ebb and flow.
There's definitely an ebb and a flow. There, we do a lot to plan out the big picture, but inevitably you learn new things as you start trying to play with them that will just turn things into new places that you didn't expect. And so kind of the conceptual space was there from the beginning. And there were elements like, say, that you obviously have to plan out with both the sets at once. Like, I'll give you a good example of that is the masterpieces. Mm. As we were choosing them, there was very much this card would be really cool to be a masterpiece, but it is much more of an ether revolt. It is something that's good, a card that's good at destroying things versus putting a card into the first set that's much more appropriate to kind of have that beautiful treatment, but is not going to be like weapon of war, for example.
Mm-hmm. Unless it's a map.
So some things very deliberately get parsed out like that. What was that?
Unless it's a map.
Yeah. Damn that renegade map.
Oh, God. That's cool. Hey, Henry has another question. Henry's full of questions tonight.
It certainly appears as though certain archetypes and colors are designed to be pushed as part of a block or set. How far into production/design are any adjustments made before hitting the point of no return?
That's a great question. It is never our intention to be pushing sort of one color especially hard. This might also be one that you can corner Ben Hayes on a little bit more, but we play with a lot of different archetypes, but we always want them to be balanced. Some of the time, you know, if something fell behind a little bit, you want to give it a little bit more juice. I guess I also, as I started saying that, I'm particularly thinking of Limited, because designers are often very heavily involved in shaping themes that you feel through the whole set, and so Limited becomes part of our work, where development is much more focused on individual cards. And so that's much more going to influence something like a standard, where there's a little bit more of an ebb and a flow. There's kind of a drilling down and a drilling down. Changes sometimes need to happen really, really late. Hopefully late you are changing individual cards and not set themes or mechanics or big swaths of the set. Once you start getting art back, just on a practical level, you have to really start nailing things down, and there's a really high bar to pull something entirely. But, you know, numbers can be changing on cards really late, and so that can have a huge impact on how they're going to actually play in the real world. But, yes, Ben Hayes did it all. You should ask him.
That's excellent. Well, we'll be talking to Ben Hayes about that.
Uh-oh.
He'll also have a lot of insight. I mean, to the point on, you know, as the developer, he is dealing with that set right up until the last minute, right when you've handed it to the editor and it's in their hands and you have to go over to their desks and be like, can I please change this one number? We've been testing a little bit more, and if it was a 3-4 instead of a 3-3, standard is going to be 10% better. And those conversations happen very late, but he can talk to you a little bit more about just when the point of no return shows up, and, you know, Matt Tabak refuses to ducks away and hides when you come near his desk or whatever it is.
Denied.
Caps doesn't return your phone calls.
Or, oh no, it's Siege Rhino. All right. Yeah, Commander players don't get that. So do you think development has like a secret meeting where they don't even have the representative from design and creative on the team, where they just like they get together when the art shows up and they're like, all right, this just got real. We got to settle this stuff and we got to do it right now.
I feel like you're just poking me and trying to get me in a fight with Ben Hayes. What do they do? I'm going to go shoot him in the back of the head with a map tomorrow.
Hey, Ben Hayes. Pa-pow!
Take two damage.
Take two damage, buddy.
Some of the time, though, to the point of the art coming back, there. Yeah. When you are working on a set and you are still developing things, there are sometimes weird negotiations that do take place. I mean, I have been on development teams before, so I can speak a little bit to the process. But
yeah,
some of the time, you'll go to the creative rep on the set and be like, I want to change this from a 2-1 to a 3-1. Could this... You're looking at this griffin. Could this griffin be a 3-1? And that's just, sometimes a weird conversation to have, because that's, you know, such a matter of opinion, and they'll be like, yeah, 3-1's okay, and then you'll come back a week later and be like, what if it was a 4-1? And they're like, no, stop it.
Can you put horns on it or something?
Can't you just Photoshop some horns in that?
Add in some scale birds so it looks bigger.
Hey, you like eye lasers, right? We got eye lasers. What this SES needs is more Jace.
Yeah, Jackie Miller has a question, doesn't she?
Yeah. Why is there no Jace this block?
That's an interesting question. So we typically see somewhere between about 4 and 6 planeswalkers in the course of a block. And the Gatewatch have 5 members, and then there's all the people from the worlds and the antagonists and the other people who they meet. So you don't get to see every planeswalker in every block. And there's this, every time we talk about planeswalkers, there's simultaneously this question about the story, which is that part of it. And there's the development side of it, which is Standard wants to have a rotation going on. You don't want to see every planeswalker in every block. Jace was just, to both the story and the development side, he was a huge part of Shadows Over Innistrad. And so, you know, though he is a part of the story, he is not getting a card in either of the sets, and you will definitely be seeing him again. He is going to continue to be part of the story, and...
No. Okay.
I'm not saying it was Jackie, but someone in our patron chat group said, a Jace-less block is not a magic block I want to see.
See? Yes, that warms my heart. That warms my heart because Jace is one of those really divisive characters. You love him or you love to hate him, and... I think he's a great part of the story, so I'm always excited to see him. And he's a fun... He has a lot of fun space to design to, so he's also fun from that perspective. Though Chandra is my favorite planeswalker, I will admit I fully have favorites.
More you favor her more than, I don't know, I'll just pick something out of a hat. Nicol Bolas?
Oh, Nicol Bolas is super cool.
But I'm hoping we get an intro deck. How did you pronounce it? Because I don't want to get on the wrong side of Jeremy.
What was that?
How do you pronounce that planeswalker?
Nicol Bolas.
Nicol Bolas. Okay. Sorry, Jeremy. I know you don't listen. But someday you'll be on the show, and having angered you prematurely is not our goal.
You can ask Doug all the pronunciation questions too. He'll have lots of opinions. I know I'm shipping all the difficult questions for your next 2 weeks, but
yeah. You're like, oh, pronunciation? Where's Doug? Okay. That's enough about Planeswalkers. That, Nate, let's not tell Sean about our watch list of Jaces.
We'd already did that, though.
We did tell him about it?
No, we did a watch list on Jaces.
I know. Let's not tell him about it.
Oh, yeah. What watch list on Jaces?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Skim through these past episodes.
Nate, we got some new keywords this Aether Revolt set coming up.
Yeah. So there's Improvise. So it's almost Affinity, but it's not Affinity. Each artifact you tap after paying for mana abilities pays for one.
It's Convoke.
Convoke for artifacts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's also Revolt. If a permanent you controlled left the battlefield this turn, then something extra happens.
How many Revolt in development jokes did you make?
So, I am sure, given the people who worked on that set, that there was a sea of puns that they were drowning in.
Oh, you destroyed my thing? What a Revolt in development.
I've been in rooms with Mark Rosewater and Mark Gottlieb where...
Oh,
the
goodness gracious.
Opportunity will arise, and you'll see them both scrambling to make it.
That's awesome. Who wins that?
Well, none of us.
Oh, brilliant.
So what I can say on Improvise is if I have a regret of Kaladesh, not necessarily regret, but something that an opportunity that I think we missed is, despite it being an artifact set, there wasn't sort of a mechanical expression that was consistent that said, this is why artifacts are cool. So I think Improvise is really a neat thing for that the Aether Revolt team to have picked up on and sort of found that direction that, you know, you just want to have artifacts. You made servos or thopters or any of the little, you know, those sort of the sacrificey artifacts from the first set. And now you just get to make them all a little bit cooler, and you get to occasionally cheat cards out way earlier than you might expect to, paying a lot less. Especially with artifacts, because, you know, Convoke that it's riffing on, your creatures are always worth something when they're untapped, but you have plenty of artifacts that you are just happy to tap. You don't care if they're tapped, untapped, whatever. And so it just feels like you are getting free mana out of it. I really think it's a really clever mechanic.
Yeah. You can use it with Howling Mind pretty well.
Yes, there are some big opportunities to be sneaky with it.
Mm-hmm. Nate's going to discover many of them, if not all of them.
Ta-da!
We'll probably read about some of them, won't we?
Maybe.
All right, there are six legendary creatures. Well, seven, sort of. But there are six castable legendary creatures this set. And we'll go in Wooburg order, and we'll kind of talk about them in the context of Commander. We'll start with Srum Senior Edificer. What a title. Legendary creature dwarf advisor. 2/2 for one and a white. Whenever you cast an aura, equipment, or vehicle spell, draw a card.
I can tell you this was a real controversial card to that Council of Colors, that there was a big question. We usually don't just write the line of text, draw a card on white cards. So we really went back and forth on whether this really very white input, auras, equipment, and vehicles, was appropriate to get this very not traditionally white output of just pure, you know, cards. And I think it's really cool. This is, you know, this card couldn't exist in a different color in quite this form, but so it's a really neat card. And I mean, I love that piece of art with the tuning fork in his mouth.
Yeah, that's neat. I like how it was worked into the story, the text story too.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of deck does he go into in a Commander context? Is it a specialized Enchantress deck, or does Srum actually make Dipala work?
I mean, he helps Dipala, sure, but I don't know if he works on his own. Maybe there's a Voltron challenge there. which there will be another one of those coming up later.
Yes, there will.
I just want to, I mean, I haven't really thought about this until now, but I just want to get the cheapest Oros equipment and vehicles I possibly can and use them to chain out as much stuff as I possibly could.
Yeah. Well, Smuggler's Copter isn't banned.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for 2 mana, that's not bad. You'll be able to cast him a lot. And if he's a Voltron commander, you'll have to cast him a lot.
Hey, maybe Earl the Mistalker could use him.
True, because you're putting a lot of auras out, aren't you?
Yep. Putting them all in one place, usually.
This is maybe a plan B.
Nah, he's part of plan A.
Awesome. Oh, and so listeners, as we run through these cards, make notes yourself and tell us either on Twitter or send us email at cast@commanderandmtg.com and tell us how you would use these legendary creatures. Sorry, I should have said that right at the very beginning. What's the next one, Nate?
Baral, Chief of Compliance, 1 and a blue, legendary creature, human wizard. He's a 1/3. Instant and sorcery spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. And, oh, this is going to make you a lot of friends. Whenever a spell or ability you control counters a spell, you may draw a card if you do discard a card. Yeah, so maybe some annoying Talran decks just figured out how to switch over and become more annoying. Probably show up in Mizzix and help out.
Yeah, why not? Goodness gracious. So you see him in the 99 and not... Well, you see him as a commander, don't you?
Yeah, I think he'll probably show up.
Uh-oh.
I'll give you advice for when Doug's there. You can compliment him by... telling him just how terrified you're going to be to see Baral across the table, because that is a real story win.
Yeah, my wife, she works in a legal compliance department. She's been getting a kick out of all these Baral-related card reveals. Show them to her.
Does she have a favorite so far, or are they all just tickling her?
Oh, she likes the Insidious Will picture. She likes it without the mask.
Oh. It is, after all about compliance, isn't it?
Yep. Got to do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, that's all Baral's making sure you do.
Yep.
And what he wants you to do, and only what he wants you to do.
Well, got to comply.
Yeah. Sean, you want to read this one?
Yeheni, Undying Partisan.
Oh.
Etherborn Vampire. 2 and a black, 2/2, haste. Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, put a +1/+1 counter on Yeheni. Sacrifice another creature. Yeheni gains indestructible until end of turn. The time for subtlety is over, darling. I don't think I gave a very good Yeheni voice there as I said that.
It certainly was a Yeheni voice, though. Where does this one have a home?
Yeah, I think it can have a home in a few places. Now, you'll notice that the first ability, if you got Kalidus Traitor of Get, they cancel. These abilities don't work together because Kalidus' ability is a die exile replacement, so she's not going to get stuff. But otherwise, if you're playing Vampire Tribal, sure. If you got Kresh the Blood Braided, Glissa the Traitor, Lim Duel the Necromancer, Obnixilus Unshackled, Zergo Helm Smasher, maybe? Tesa Envoy of Ghosts? Hey, how about Marquesa the Black Rose? You can sacrifice stuff and they just come right back. Ta-da! And I'm indestructible. How do you like that?
Ta-da! That was funny, Nate. Yeah, not bad, huh?
Yeah, it'll show up.
Yeah. There's some pretty good bears in this set, huh?
I think it's a good set for vampires.
Oh, this is terrible. You have several vampire decks, don't you?
I got a couple, yeah.
You got a couple. Marquesa or Marchesa, is she your favorite? Is that what you said, Sean?
Oh, I just mean she's great conspiracy character.
Mm-hmm.
I love seeing commander decks with her.
Yeah, I got one of those, too.
Yeah, you do.
Me, too.
You had a little something to do with Marchesa, didn't you?
A little bit.
Mm-hmm. Leovold, So
no. Ben Hayes.
Ah, Kari Zev. Next one is Kari. Kari Zev, Skyship Raider, a human pirate for one and a red. She's a 1/3, continuing the both power and toughness add up to 4 theme, but a variation. First strike and menace whenever Kari Zev, Skyship Raider, attacks, create a legendary 2/1 red monkey creature token named Rugavon that's tapped and attacking. Exile that token at end of combat. Oh, let's read that. Yeah. Aboard her ship, the dragon smile. Kari follows no one's rules but her own. In what deck would you put her, Nate?
Probably Purphoros.
Monkey. I mean, my first thought was after you bring her out in Alesha, she can be, she can bring all sorts of fun and profit to the table.
Yeah, but she's not going to get her monkey because Alesha brings her out. She's already tapped and attacking, right. So she doesn't get that trigger. No monkey for you.
Aww.
Ken Nagel was talking about this card and is like, I don't know whether this makes me want to build a pirate-themed commander deck or a monkey-themed commander deck.
Oh, the answer is yes. Yeah, we'll be talking a little bit more about Rugavon a little bit later. So yeah, you have a note here that she's a good Purphoros helper, like Hanwer Garrison.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
And if you got some goofy deck like Squee or Norin, then you can get thematically even more silly.
Nate, you want to read Rishkar?
Rishkar Pima Renegade, 2 and a green, legendary creature, elf druid. When Rishkar enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to 2 target creatures.
Support 2.
And each creature you control with a counter on it, doesn't say what kind of counter. Each creature you control with a counter on it has tap, add a green to your mana pool.
So obviously Atraxa. Did the team design it with Atraxa in mind?
I wish I could tell you the story on this one. I think it's a really cool card, but I don't know the story behind it.
What kind of counters you want to put on that, Nate?
Oh, I don't know. There's all kinds of counters.
There are. Aether is the soul of Kaladesh, and all souls should be free. There you go. Sean, I guess you'd read this last one. It breaks the bear rule.
Hope of Jirapur. 1 mana, Thopter, legendary artifact creature Thopter, 1/1, flying, sacrifice Hope of Jirapur. Until your next turn, target player who is dealt combat damage by Hope of Jirapur this turn can't cast non-creature spells. Legendary Thopter.
How about that?
So, what's the over-under on how many commander decks show up on EDH Rec with this is the commander? Here's a challenge. Challenge to all of you.
And they have to be viable decks, don't they? They can't just be...
Oh, I don't know about that. That's going to be hard to judge there.
I've been busy since this was spoiled. Has anyone in our deck testing group accepted this challenge?
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, you wizards and your secrets. So, speaking of secrets, we like cards. Let's not keep that a secret anymore. Woo! Hey, it's getting hot in here. So the way we do this now, we've selected 5 cards each, and Sean, you have replaced Sean. Oh, hey, Nate, do we know how the Brexit negotiations are going?
Oh, they're going terrible, man. There's spotted dick everywhere.
Oh, God, no. So we've selected 5 cards. Sorry to hear that about the Brexit negotiation. We've selected 5 cards that may help with this negotiation, especially if they're violent cards. And we'll start with our number 5 choice, and we'll go all the way down to our favorite choice. And we'll rotate through each one, so we'll all share our favorite cards in number 5 slot first and so on. Blah, blah.
That's mind-blowing, man.
Yeah, totally mind-blowing. It was clearly mind-blowing because my mind leaked all over my shoulders just then. Oh. Nate, what's your number five card?
All right, so I mentioned King Makar the Gold Cursed earlier, right?
You did mention him.
So, check this out. Mobile Garrison costs 3. It's a 3/4. Artifact vehicle, who cares? What's so special about this thing?
Uh-oh.
Hey, it's got crew 2. Hey, King Makar has a power of 2. Hey, whenever Mobile Garrison attacks, untap another target artifact or creature you control. Hey, whenever you untap King Makar, stuff happens. And it's pretty cool. So we talked about this in episode 73, but here's this vehicle. You cast this on turn 3. Then you cast King Makar on turn 4. And summoning sickness doesn't matter for crewing a vehicle, so you can tap him immediately to crew this vehicle. And now it attacks, and you immediately untap Makar, you exile a potential blocker, and you get some gold. And then you can tap Makar again to crew the vehicle, because even if it's already a creature, you can crew it again. So you do that before your next turn's untapped. So you untap this guy twice in your turn.
Oh.
For 3 mana there. Phil, what's your number 5 card?
I'm horrified. My number 5 card is just a big dumb beater. and it's not even as good. It's got 4 mana cost. And it's an uncommon as opposed to your common.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Untethered Express. Actually, because it looks like a rhino. Or a Styracosaurus, really. Has trample, who cares, right? It's whenever Untethered Express attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on it. Crew 1 for a 4/4, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Nate?
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
King Makar will use that too, sure. Use them both. They're great.
Yeah.
He might even use one to crew the other, just to be funny.
Just.
Oh, yes.
Who knew he had such a garage full of cars?
That's inspirational. Are we going to see a Jay Leno deck?
Not for me.
Sean, what's your number 5?
Quick Smith Spy. Ooh, that's a tongue twister. When she enters the battlefield, target artifact you control gains tap, draw a card, as long as you control Quick Smith Spy. And I want to, you know, we mentioned both the weaponized maps of her sister card, but also, you know, using her alongside something like Howling Mine to get double the draws. I'm very excited for.
Yeah, that's good. King Makar can't use that, Nate.
Not unless you turn him into an artifact first.
True. Hey, does she have a little Phyrexian tear coming off her eye?
I can't zoom in that far.
I'm going to say no. I don't want to answer too many story questions, but no.
Yeah, these artifacts aren't alive themselves. They're made by people. He said that earlier.
He did. They're not actually alive.
Yeah, you got to save that for the next Phyrexian set.
Yeah.
Who knows when that'll happen?
Who knows? I mean, come on. That might never happen. Planar Bridge, rather.
So my number 4 card, Gifted Aetherborn. Is this going to be Aetherborn now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Gifted Aetherborn. Black. It's a creature. Aetherborn Vampire. 2/3. Death Touch and Life Link. Hey.
But it doesn't fly.
Hey, that's fine. I'll take them both. It's a vampire. It works.
Yeah, it does.
It does its job.
That's a good card.
Yep.
Oh, Nate. Must you hurt us all?
Yep.
My number 4 is, again, it's because I like green things. This one's not quite green, though. It's more blue. It's Lifecrafter's Bestiary. Is that the actual English name? Because we only have the Korean at the time of the show.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, Lifecrafter's Bestiary is correct.
Lifecrafter's Bestiary. For 3 mana, it's an artifact. At the beginning of your upkeep, scry 1. Whenever you cast a creature spell, you may pay G, and if you do, draw a card. How about that? It's a good utility card. Goes in a variety of decks that include green.
Yeah, that makes sense. So my number four is Kari Zev, the aforementioned. I don't know what kind of deck I want to build with her, but she is the kind of card that I just want to play her as my commander because I want to make monkeys.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. We three actually share a similar interest. So Nate, what's your number three card? It's hard to talk about monkeys, you know, like you have to find that line. How much do we actually talk about monkeys? And the answer is always not enough, but what is too much? How do we know?
Well, the next card's a monkey. Oh.
It is.
Sometimes it could be.
Yay.
So, Metallic Mimic is an artifact creature shapeshifter for two, and it's a 2/1.
Oh, dear.
As it enters the battlefield, you choose a creature type, and Metallic Mimic is the chosen type. In addition to its other types, each other creature you control of the chosen type enters the battlefield with an additional +1/+1 counter on it. So, you know, I like tribal decks. I have Adaptive Automaton in a lot of them for 3 mana. I'd throw this in there, sure.
Yeah. You do like them tribal decks.
Yeah. And if there's a tribe that doesn't really have enough good creatures yet, they haven't printed them yet, then you got to make do.
For your tribal shapeshifter deck, you don't even need to choose a creature type.
There you go.
Yeah. I confess I did not. When I was first one in the show plan, I did not choose this one because I thought Nate's going to like this one. My, we've sort of talked about number three, my number three already. It's Aid from the Cowl. For 3 in green, you get an enchantment with Revolt. At the beginning of your end step, if a permanent you controlled left the battlefield this turn, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a permanent card, you may put it onto the battlefield. Lurking Predators. Otherwise, you may put it on the bottom of your library. And since we're playing green, we don't want those filthy non-permanents. Filthy, vile non-permanents. This has a home maybe in Marath, but definitely Kara Metro, where everything, the way I play it, is an enchantment. So, or a land. And there's like 3 instants of sorceries in there, and it's the standard, you know.
And one of them's Primal Surge.
No, believe it or not, I shied away from that because, you know, I didn't.
You thought Genesis Wave was more fair?
No, I didn't even put Genesis Wave in. I just shied away from that because I wanted my effects to come from triggers. And because we like triggers, don't we, Nate?
Sure.
Yeah.
There's a whole layer going on here that I am not have no insight into.
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
This is better if you don't know this one because it's shameful. But will you be at GP Las Vegas?
Perhaps. I don't know my plans yet.
Well, if you're there, we'll show you.
Okay.
Maybe with this deck.
Okay.
Sorry, maybe with this card in that deck.
I need to be terrified, I think.
No. You will feel an emotion very strongly, but it will not be terror.
Oh, okay. I am excited.
Let's just say revulsion is not limited to cards. All right. What's your number three?
So my number three is Mechanized Production. 2UU. It's an aura.
It's a great card.
Enchant artifact you control. At the beginning of your upkeep, create a token that's a copy of enchanted artifact. Then if you control 8 or more artifacts with the same name as one another, you win the game. I am not so interested in winning the games with this card, but Boy Followed Footsteps is my kind of magic card. Yeah. And so I am excited to find things to put this on. And always the problem with Followed Footsteps is someone kills your creature before you get to do anything. But artifacts tend to stick around a little longer, so...
Yeah, sure, if you're doing... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, what is happening to Vandal Blast anyway? Have we seen... Is that spiking yet? It's pretty cheap. Nate, what's your number two? Ooh.
My number two...
I knew it.
I shifted around a bit and I settled on this one. Dark Intimations.
Ooh.
2 blue... black, red, sorcery. It's only 5 mana. Each opponent sacrifices. Just stop there. Those three words. I love those three words. They're the first three words on the card. Each opponent sacrifices a creature or planeswalker. Each opponent. Hey, you pick one. Get rid of it. And then they discard a card. You return a creature or planeswalker card from your graveyard to your hand, then draw a card.
Yeah, how was that?
Now, you don't even need the next part, but hey, when you cast a bolus planeswalker spell, which I have been known to do, exile dark intimations from your graveyard. That planeswalker enters the battlefield with an additional loyalty counter on it.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, there's only one bolus planeswalker card right now. So this the wording on this card kind of, I don't know. It's worded pretty specifically.
It's almost as if it's intimating something. Something dark.
Darkly. Yeah.
Oh, I'm enjoying this all too much.
Yeah. And the Vorthoses among the audience are already saying, that's the planar bridge in the picture. It is.
It is.
My number two is incredibly predictable, almost as predictable as Nate's in its own way, but more like puppies are predictable. A Johnny Unyielding, not the Unyielding, for four and a green and a white. You got a Planeswalker, a Johnny. How about that? He comes in with four loyalty counters, and for plus two, you reveal the top three cards from your library, put all non-land permanent cards you reveal this way into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. That's pretty useful. Pretty useful. Especially in a deck where you have a lot of non-land permanents, let's say. For minus two, Swords to Plowshares, that's great. And a minus nine ultimate, which we'll never see, but imagine it. Please imagine it, because it's so glorious. But five... plus one counters on each creature you control, and five loyalty counters on each other planeswalker you control. Just close your eyes for a minute and imagine that. Sean, you're number two?
My number two? No, I'm still imagining.
Yeah. Sorry. I'll give you a moment.
So my number two is Rishkar's Expertise.
Ooh.
Six mana. The whole expertise cycle, I think, is really cool, but this is easily the one I want to play most in Commander.
Mm-hmm.
Six mana, draw cards equal to the greatest power among creatures you control. You may cast a card with converted mana cost five or less from your hand for free.
There's a lot of value in that card, isn't there?
I have a Mile deck that is very excited to see this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Green is known for a couple of big creatures.
It might have some big creatures.
All right, we're in the number one cards. Everybody calm down. Nate, what is your number one card?
Yeah, my number one card is it's another one of these expertise cards. I think this entire expertise cycle, they all smell like Commander staples.
Yeah, they do.
And I think Rishkar's is the second best. But I think Baral's Expertise is the best. For three blue-blue sorcery, return up to three target artifacts and or creatures to their owner's hands, and you may cast a card with converted mana cost four or less from your hand. Hey, Yidris. Hey, you like cascading things from your hand? And you don't have to pay the mana cost.
Oh, that sounds appealing.
Yeah, so I think Yidris, Maelstrom Wielder, he's got four new cards to put in his deck. Mm-hmm. Got to make room there.
Yeah, you're going to have to find room. You're going to have to cut some things. My number one card is actually not a castable card. It's Rugavan, the legendary token creature monkey. 2-1 monkey.
2-1 monkey.
2-1 monkey. Who cares what else it does? Who cares if it does anything else? It doesn't. It's a legendary monkey, Nate.
Yeah. Hey, can you make this look like a 2-1 in the art instead of a 1-1?
He's not vicious enough for you?
How about if he's screaming with fangs instead of smiling?
Yeah, can you Photoshop some fangs in there?
Yeah. Yeah, that looks, I don't know. Is that a 2-1?
Maybe.
I can't see it.
Maybe with talons.
Is he holding a hatchet?
He's on a ship. He should be holding a hatchet.
It's right behind his back. It's the last scene in Die Hard. He's coming for you.
All right.
A Die Hard reference. Excellent.
And my number one would be very personal to me, but indomitable creativity.
Mm-hmm.
X red, 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 and sorcery, destroy X target artifacts and or creatures for each permanent destroy this way. You spin the wheel, reveal cards from the top of your library until an artifact or creature is revealed, and exile that card and put the exiled cards onto the battlefield, and then people shuffled their libraries. This was... Polymorph text has been moving around into red. This was a big thing that I got to fight for. Doug was part of this, shifting this from away from blue, which wants to be controlled, which wants to know exactly what it's getting, back into red. And Ben really was someone who ran with it. And I don't know who on his team made this card, but I think this is awesome. You know, what's better than polymorphing one thing? Polymorphing everything I want you to get rid of.
Yeah, so if you're making a goofy clue deck, then if mechanized production doesn't win you the game, then you can turn them all into stuff from your deck. Turn all those clues into stuff.
Yeah. Don't bother spending mana on those clues. Why spend mana when you can do this?
Well, you gotta spend X red, red, red.
Sure, but you're not spending two per.
Now all your clues and, hey, maybe your thopters too.
Mm.
Let's make a mess of thopters and clues and then turn them into stuff.
Oh, man.
I do love free stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, who doesn't like free stuff?
Yeah, free stuff's good. Good thing tokens aren't a thing in red. Wow. Yeah, that's a great card. And that happened on your watch as Red Mage, didn't it?
Yeah, I am super proud of that.
All right. And was that like your mic drop? Poof.
And I'm out.
And then you're like, I've done it all. Out.
I'm turning all my fake goblins into real goblins.
All right. It's almost the end of the show, Nate.
I got a message. Hey, this has been a couple good sets, a good block for artifacts, yeah?
Yeah. Great card. Yeah. Great set for artifacts. Great
you
block.
Like having a lot of artifacts on the table.
Love them.
Yeah. You like... Hey, sometimes you like making your artifacts indestructible.
Oh.
Yeah, that's nice.
I like me some indestructible artifacts.
That's real nice. Yeah, that's a lot of indestructible artifacts you got there. Consulate Crackdown, 3WW, enchantment. When Consulate Crackdown enters the battlefield, exile all artifacts your opponents control until Consulate Crackdown leaves the battlefield.
God, someone is making Muzio cry.
Yeah. Hey, Brea, get out of here.
Aw.
Take your stuff with you, but don't bring those thopters back. Well, maybe bring a couple, but...
but not for a little while. That's mean, Nate.
Nah, it's magic.
That consulate, those guys are jerks. We should rise up against them.
You know, I agree with the Red Mage.
Yeah.
Got to get your artifacts back. Well, some of them. We're going to keep all your clues. They're just gone.
Yeah, they're just gone. You're clueless now. And all those servos and thopters, gone. That evil consulate, indeed. I'm with Sean. Let's rebel. Sean, when we're plotting the rebellion against the consulate, how can people reach out to you?
I can be reached on Twitter, at Sean Main. That's unlike your usual Sean, that's S-H-A-W-N, but that's probably the best way to reach me.
Yeah, we decided the S-H-A-W-N was the correct spelling, is that right?
I'm 100% behind this.
Sean, thanks for hanging out with us this long. You've been a real champ, putting up with us for goodness gracious a long time.
It has been a pleasure.
Yeah. It really has been a pleasure. It's been so much fun. For all the listeners who've stuck it out, thank you for hanging out with us this long as well. If you want to support the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/commanderandmtg and give us a buck a show. And $10 or more per episode, you can come join our chat community. We mentioned that. It's over on Facebook. Or, you know what, just skip all that and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps it. And, of course, this is a modal choice, so just choose one of those. Although iTunes reviews are free, so just go off and do those. we love all of you, every one of our listeners, and we're incredibly grateful. It's really hard to express, genuinely hard to express, how grateful we are to all of our patrons. So come help us plan the show and get your gratitude from us, exactly like Jackie Miller and Henry Stulkenborg and Andy Bentley are getting. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Mr. Nate Burgess. Yep. That's a mighty theme song, Nate.
All right.
Yeah. Lots of trumpets sometimes. Our logo is created for the podcast by Mr. Picto, who you can reach at mrpicto.co.uk with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. Terry Robertson probably handled the editing for this show, and special thanks to Hunter Pruitt for putting the YouTube video together for this episode and for several others so far. And special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and of course, to Justin for his server space and bandwidth. I should mention that. You can reach us by going to our website, commander@mtg.com, and our email is cast@commander@mtg.com. Nate, what social media can we be found on?
Oh, all of them. You just search for Commanderin with the apostrophe. Or not. Just no G on the end.
No G.
Commanderin MTG podcast.
Yep. And individually on Twitter, I'm at Ketjack.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And we need one last update on the Brexit negotiations. We can also ask Sean directly on Twitter at Copain26. But what's the update?
I got no idea.
Yeah, it's a mess right now. There's a lot of arguing and screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As usual.
Mm-hmm. It is Britain. They do that sort of thing when debating things, especially in government. Sean, would you take us out, please?
This has been the Commanderin MTG podcast and scene.
All right.
Commanderin. How's that?
Oh, that was beautiful. Man, I love having you on the show. Nate, you love him?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know where I was going with that. I'm just so punchy. I was going to say something like, Nate, you too? But we do, man. It is so great having you on. Thank you.
Absolutely.